This is a translated sermon by Jan Fluyt. The title of the sermon is Open Your Eyes. Good morning, brothers and sisters. This morning, I have a very special story for you about how 10 people can be life-changing for 3 million people. Isn't that wonderful? We all enjoy stories like that. I'm fond of stories anyway, once with a moral that I can apply to myself personally and put into practice in my daily life. Well, that's an interesting notion, isn't it? That just 10 people could have such a profound influence on the lives of 3 million. We'd all like to be able to do that. However, this example, this story, is not at all positive. 10 spies prevent 3 million people from entering the promised land. But that's a very strange thing to happen, don't you think? I mean, just think about it. Surely, 3 million people wouldn't let themselves be held back by just 10 people. No, that's not possible. And yet, it says so in Numbers chapter 13. And I want to share some thoughts about this with you. Even if it is from a negative aspect, it still fascinates me. How can something like that happen? You're probably thinking that that all happened a long time ago. They didn't know much then. Not like now. We think we know it all, don't we? But it is still very strange that so many people are so profoundly influenced by circumstances and gossip. Because that's what it was. That's what it's all about. I'm not going to read the whole chapter because it's full of long lists of names, but I will begin with verse 1. Numbers chapter 13, verse 1. There, God says to Moses, choose a leader from each tribe and send them into Canaan to explore the land I'm giving you. So Moses sent 12 tribal leaders from Israel's camp in the Paran Desert. Then you get the list of all their names. And then in verse 17, Moses says, after you go through the southern desert of Canaan, continue north into the hill country and find out what those regions are like. Be sure to remember how many people live there, how strong they are, and if they live in open towns or walled cities. See if the land is good for growing crops and find out what kinds of trees grow there. It's time for grapes to ripen, so try to bring back some of the fruit that grows there. Well, let's have a look at this passage before we read any further. We have already read some important things, and the most important is right at the beginning. Send some men to Canaan. And then it says, to explore the land that I am giving you. So the outcome was already a known factor. Go and explore the land that I'm going to give you to you. Go on. And that wasn't said to just anyone who happened to be listening. It was said to the leaders of each tribe. One translation says, to the kings of each tribe. And that's what we'd like to be, kings and priests. Big and strong. Well, that's what these men were. They had proved themselves to be strong and reliable, so they were the right people to send, or were they? They had proven that they were able to observe well and listen well and could be trusted to keep their eyes wide open so that they wouldn't miss anything. And what I like about this is that when they are sent on their mission, it says all in one sentence, make sure you look at everything, not just the fruits, That's something we'd want to see, especially me. Not just the good things, but take a look at everything. Check out what problems you might come up against, whether there are enemies there, and whether they are strong or weak. Go and take a look at the cities, and see if they are surrounded by walls, or whether you can just walk in. Go and take a good look. So God doesn't say, I want you to go through life with blinkers on, so that you only see the good things, so that you can be positive about everything you see, and ignore the rest. No, he says, look at everything, in the knowledge that everything that you are going to see, even the enemy, and everything that is still in the possession of the enemy, all that will be yours. God said so. So that means that whatever you see, you must keep in mind what God has said and promised. While you look around you, you are to keep in mind the promise that God has made you in the assurance he promised, not with the attitude, he is the one who said it, and he is the one who has faith in the outcome, so he should be the one to do it. No, he has faith in you. He believes in the outcome, and you are going to do it. What God has promised will gradually become visible to you. It will amaze you, and then you will begin to see wonderful things. A bunch of grapes, so big, it takes two of you to carry it. I'd like to see a bunch of grapes like that. A bunch of grapes that has to be carried on the shoulders between two people. By the way, I know who it was who brought these grapes back. It was Joshua and Caleb. Because they weren't 10 spies, they were 12. And Joshua and Caleb were on the side of faith. And the other 10, we know the story of course, they took the side of unbelief, looking wrongly and drawing wrong conclusions. So, verse 21, they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin to Rehob, to the entrance of Hamath. They went up to by the south and came to Hebron, and Ahiman, Shesai, and Talmai, the children of Anak, were there. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. They came to the valley of Eshcol and cut down from there a branch with one bunch of grapes. And they bore it on a staff between two. They brought also of the pomegranates and of the figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol, because of the grapes which the children of Israel cut down from there. They returned from spying out the land at the end of 40 days. In other words, they returned after a time of exploring, finding out things, and getting the feeling of the place. The 12 men returned to Kadesh in the Paran desert and told Moses, Aaron, and the whole congregation of people what they had seen, and showed them the fruit, and said, look at this fruit. The land we explored is rich with milk and honey, but the people who live there are strong, and their cities are large and walled. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. And then they go on to explain who lives where, frightening the people with their descriptions. Then Caleb tries to calm the people and says to Moses and all the people, let us go at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men who went up with him said, we aren't able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are. So then you start to think, what has happened here? 12 people have seen exactly the same things, right? They traveled together, and they all saw the same things. And yet, two of them have a differing opinion, a different conclusion. And these two don't say, the cities are not walled. They don't disagree about what they have seen, but what they do say is, it is a beautiful country, and God is with us. If you see how they describe it, surely it flows with milk and honey. And then in verse 28, but the people who dwell in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified, and very great, and the people are very tall. Those are their observations. Sometimes you can see a great denial, a contradiction in a positive verse. Yes, it's true. We do have a wonderful gospel, definitely. The Lord has made us some wonderful promises, that's true, too. And now you can guess what's coming next. But, in the situation I find myself in now, well, that's different. Things aren't going so well. And so, you start by talking about a great and wonderful God, but then the next bit is always about the insignificant you. You are so small and insignificant, and things are going well, and all of a sudden, you're talking about yourself and what you can't do. And you know, it's okay to talk about what you can't do. It's fine to show your weak points and to admit that you can't manage on your own. If I look at myself on my own, without a father and without Jesus, and I come to the conclusion that not much will become of me, then maybe I'm right. But when I bring the Father into the picture, and His power and strength, if I open my eyes to those possibilities, then I will have a very exciting life. And it will stay like that. I'm 61 now, and I notice that people have started to comment on my age. Not directly, but more in the line of, how long have you got to go? Before I can retire from my work, they mean, but even so, it sounds quite dramatic. How long have you got? A long time, I hope. But it seems I should start thinking about cutting down on my work, because there are lots of things you can't do anymore when you get older. Well, let me assure you, I can still do lots of things, and I intend to continue doing them. Of course, I don't run like a hare anymore, although maybe it looks like that sometimes. Recently, I read a one-liner. If you are over the hill, that's when the speed increases. I liked that. It's true. How do you look at things? As I see it, I have a choice. I can let myself be blinded by all sorts of denials and negative thinking, or I can trust God. So, how do I look at things? How do I think? How do I live? How do I reach my conclusions? You can imagine all sorts of things, but it's far better to return to the basis of the faith and believe that God has. I read a good story once, which illustrates perfectly how differently you can react to things you hear and see. And I want to share it with you. Sherlock Holmes, the famous detective, and his colleague, Dr. Watson, went camping together. After a good meal and a bottle of wine, they went to sleep in their tent. A few hours later, Holmes woke up and nudged his trusty and learned friend and said, Watson, look at the sky and tell me what you see. Watson answered, I see millions and millions of stars. So what conclusion can you draw from that? Watson thought for a while. From an astronomical point of view, I conclude that there are millions of galaxies and possibly billions of planets. From an astrological point of view, I see that Saturn is positioned in the lion. From a logical point of view, I deduce that it is about 3:15. From a theological point of view, I can see that God is almighty and that we are small and unimportant. From a meteorological point of view, I think that the weather will be fine tomorrow. What conclusion do you come to? Holmes was quiet for a while and then he said, I conclude that the thief has stolen our tent. You see, you can make things very complicated, or you can keep it simple. And I believe that God is a God of simplicity, of truth and sincerity, of life and new opportunities. That's what I love about him. This morning, we saw a beautiful photo of little Dan. I myself have 3 grandchildren. As far as I'm concerned, everything they say about grandparents is true. Wonderful, you know, and you often hear people say they've got a lot to learn. But you know, you can also learn a lot from these small children. Spontaneity, sincerity, they don't doubt themselves. They don't ask themselves, is it okay if I do this? Or will people laugh at me if I do that? Or will other people think it odd? They just do things. They just simply live their lives. And Jesus said that these little children are to be an example to us. We live in such a strange world, with so many giants, and things that have taken on enormous proportions, and of which we immediately presume we'll never be able to cope with that. And sometimes we even adapt our gospel to fit these ideas we have. I've told you before, I was brought up in a church where tradition determined that we were told practically every Sunday that as people we were worthless. We were no good, would be sinners all our lives. Even the best things were spoiled by sin and all that sort of nonsense. Then comes the transition to the gospel of the kingdom of heaven, but if you're not careful, you then proceed to fill it in as yet. That is all true. And we do have a wonderful gospel, but, you know, the devil is also at work, and he doesn't want us to do this, and he doesn't want us to do that, and he doesn't want us to grow, and we also have scars from the past to contend with. And so for every bad thing that happens to us, we try to find an excuse why it happened. And if I'm not careful, I will be in bondage for the rest of my life, or become someone who has such a problem with their past that it has an impact on the future. And I don't want it to be like that. I want to live freely and experience life to the full. Oh, people say, you obviously haven't had much to deal with in your life. Then it's easy to say something like that. And that usually means that that person himself has experienced things that have had an enormous impact on him. And they can be really terrible. The things people go through can be really terrible. And often they remain a victim of all they have seen. And I mean really seen. I notice a lot that if you start talking about the challenge of life, that the other person starts to tell you that he doesn't find it easy. After all, that has happened to him. Do I believe that? Yes, I believe that. Have I come up against things myself? Yes, I have. For example, if I had to accept that the bad things that happened to me in my past, when I was young, are going to determine what my future will be, then I haven't got much of a future to look forward to. I didn't have any friends, and at home it wasn't a very happy place. If my future is dependent on that, in fact, someone once said to me, before I became a father, someone, to be explicit, someone from the full gospel circle, he said to me, if you haven't had a good father, then you can never be a good father yourself. Well, I didn't have a good father. So, is that going to be my fate? Do you know what it is so amusing? I did become a good father, a very good one. Did I do everything right? No, but I have had so much enjoyment from these kids. And the same goes for them, they say. Isn't that wonderful? But I wasn't a victim of my past. I refused to be a victim of my past. I belong to Jesus Christ, and He opens doors for me to go through. That is so wonderful. I noticed in this story that we are reading that in verse 22 it says, they came to Hebron. So I thought, to Hebron? That means covenant. So the crucial thing seems to be, do I arrive at the covenant, or do I enter into the covenant? Do I know about the covenant, or do I make a covenant? Am I part of it? Do I just hear what the Lord says, or do I commit myself with heart and soul and do what He says? Am I therefore someone whose life becomes worthwhile, or do I remain just a victim? Because that makes such a difference. The difference between life and death. It is the difference between a generation that does or doesn't go into the promised land. Doesn't go in. That's terrible. A whole generation doesn't go into the promised land because 10 people don't focus on the promise God made. This is the land that I'm going to give to you. All their eyes see is, it is too strong, too big, too many, too awful, too... Fill it in for yourself. And what I also find so sad is that the other two, Joshua and Caleb, they have positive words. They say, it is true that there are enemies on that land, but we can take it. We can conquer them. It will happen. God promised. But no one listened to them. Recently, I had to go on a course for my work, and I heard there that if there are 13 things, and one of the 13 is negative, and the other 12 positive, then that 13th thing has more impact than all the other 12. And I think that is often true in our daily life. Just imagine this for a moment. You're having a good day. Everything is going well. And then someone says something nasty about you. And you keep on thinking about it all the time. So, I let myself become the victim of this comment. Do I let it ruin my day? Or do I see things differently? Or, to put it another way, am I oversensitive to things that people say about me? Or do I have a trusted source who speaks only good of me, who puts my life in perspective and helps me and gives me the space and opportunity to grow and improve? Something else I read recently, what you are, that is God's gift to you. What you become, that is your gift to God. I think that's a wonderful thought. So the next thing is to keep this gift of how you are in God's eyes, clear and visible in your mind. What is your self-image? How do you see yourself? How free are you? Are you content with yourself? Do you have the courage to say this? Long after I had come to know the Lord and enjoy the freedom this brings, I still feel I allowed people to put me down. People who were, that's right, in my eyes, better and bigger and more spiritual. inferiority complex. What a load of nonsense. I am myself. I'm not the other person. So I don't have to try and become like the other person, or play a role trying to be him. I can be myself, including all the things I don't yet understand or experience. It's not important. God loves me as I am, and that's my basis. And any enemies who don't want me to feel and live like this, and they do exist, personal enemies, we sometimes say, they are all by definition weaker than my Lord. That's the whole point. That's why I don't want to wait until later to learn about purity and holiness. I'm pure and clean now. How? Through the word that the Lord has spoken to me, and the things that he has said to me. Things like, come on, John, don't keep that guilty feeling for the rest of your life. I've given you space and freedom and something very powerful. That's called Holy Spirit. And that determines the way you think and believe and act. Or, as I read somewhere, God's will never bring you to a place where God's grace cannot protect you. There's reassurance and certainty there. So you don't have to think, I'm going to retreat into what I know and where I feel safe. That's what I did, you know. I literally withdrew from just about everything. Then nothing could hurt me, I thought. But if you think like that, then you're forgetting about the spiritual world. Satan will hurt you anyway, even if it is only by making you think that you can't just withdraw from life. Because they, people, whoever they may be, will think you're mad or something like that. Something else I heard. Don't give any negative thoughts about yourself a chance. Don't air them. Smother them. There are so many negative thoughts about yourself around. Don't give them a chance. Don't feed these thoughts. Starve them, ignore them, and then they will disappear. And then your life and way of thinking will become quite different, freer, more positive. And then it will be challenging, won't it, to try to live and think like that, thinking only good things about yourself, and trusting what God says. A real challenge with every new thing that happens. How did that work for the spies? Joshua and Caleb said, just look, that's a strong city. The Lord is going to give that to us too. I wonder how he will do that. Sometimes it can be very surprising how God works in your life, how you gain victory in certain situations. But remember, he has said that it is a city that he is going to give to me. And so you think, that'll take a lot of doing. How will he do that? You look at Jericho and think, however can you take that city? That'll have to be with a lot of noise and hitting the wall hard. God says later on, no, just walk around it. You don't need to say much. Literally it says, don't say anything. Just walk around it in faith. Then just wait and see what happens. And then praise your great God for the space and freedom he gives you to live in. And the enemy then? We have a song that says, our enemies are as wax in our hands. They are shaking at the knees. Sometimes you think you are the only one who does that, but in the name of the Lord, it is they who quake with fear. That's a whole different way of looking at things. The testimony that Caleb and Joshua give is wonderful. What a pity the rest of the people don't believe them. That happens to us too, doesn't it? You have such a wonderful testimony. You know God, and you enjoy your life with Him, and all the wonderful things that happen, and you tell other people about them, but they don't believe you. They don't accept what you say, and what's more, they become angry. Further on, in chapter 4, it says, if they give another testimony, then say that they should be stoned. Well, that's the limit. They have given a good testimony, and the people don't want to hear it. And even worse, they want to stone them if they say it again. Sometimes you can feel as if nothing can go right, as if everything is against you. Do you recognize that feeling? Well, it isn't just a good feeling. It doesn't just seem as if everything is against you. Everything is against you. There is a devil who says, I've decided that you're going no further, and here is the boundary, and this is far and no further. And he will go on saying that to you. It doesn't just seem like it. That's how it really is. But, and that's the important thing, it is your boundary. Do you go along with what he says? Up to verse 31, the 10 spies have given quite a good description of the things they have seen. But from verse 32 onwards, they begin to imagine things. It says, they brought out an evil report or spread false rumors. So it wasn't what they'd actually seen anymore, but what they fantasized, their own conclusions. So verse 32, they brought up an evil report of the land which they had spied out to the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that eats up the inhabitants of it, and all the people who we saw in it are men of a great stature. There we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who come of the Nephilim, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. They start imagining all the things that could happen to them. If this happens too, you can push it out of your mind, these fantasies, but often you think, if this happens, and that also, well, where will that leave me? Nowhere. And then we add, let's be honest. What is honest? Things that concern your honesty. Some things are not honest, not fair, but are true, we are told. Well, then I want to see them, because it can be one of the devil's lies, even if it is wrapped up in a box which states, this is the absolute truth. So I unpack the box, and I believe what's in it. Or do I? Because the 10 spies have been letting their imagination run riot about the enemy. I can see it before me now. Me up against a giant of a man. And I ask him, can I ask you something? How do you see me? As a grasshopper. Okay, then I am one. They went out spying, but they imagined that they were seen as grasshoppers. The fact is that that was how they really felt, how they saw themselves, the preconceived ideas they had about themselves, an easy prey, easily disarmed and destroyed. That's how they began to see themselves. This negative attitude got a real grip on them. And once you start thinking like this, how big the enemy is, and how small and insignificant you are, then you are lost. Chapter 14, verse 1 says, all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. That's sure to help. all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness, as if that is a good place to die. So if you get hold of the wrong thoughts, and your imagination starts to run away with you, and you talk about them, and philosophize about these thoughts, then they get bigger and bigger, and worse, and you sink deeper and deeper in misery and negative thinking, further and further away from the truth. Everything becomes so awful and miserable, and then we don't go from glory to glory, but from crisis to crisis. That is certainly a popular topic of discussion these days, and we do discuss it a lot. We talk about it until we believe it. We are in a crisis. I've decided they can go on and on discussing it, but I am not going to sit and listen to it all. I've better things to do with my time than sit listening to the word crisis all day long, and how bad it is, and what is going to happen, as if we don't have the promise of the Lord that He will provide for all our needs. What did you say, Jan? How many of our needs? He will supply every need of yours according to His riches in glory in Christ Jesus. Yes, a wonderful Bible text, but in reality not easy. What do you think about someone like Caleb? I've been trying to think about that. Caleb and Joshua kept making the choice to believe God. They kept choosing for the kingdom of God. That is our life, they said. Our joy is to be found there. That's why we brought the grapes back with us. We have shown you what fruits there are. That is our life. But the rest of the people don't believe them. And that means that Caleb doesn't go into the promised land either. At least not for 40 years. That's a long time to wait, don't you think? If the promised land is promised to you, and you have to wait 40 years for it, then that's a long time to have to wait, isn't it? And then I begin to wonder, what did the spies say to each other on the way back? Did they discuss what they were going to say? Shall we tell the people that we have seen a beautiful country? Yes, but what about all those other things we saw? True, but we are going to conquer them. We are not, you know. Didn't you see how strong the people are? We can never conquer them. Of course we can. I think that's how it may have gone, and then they return. The 10 spies frighten the people with their story, and Caleb and Joshua are nearly killed because they have a positive testimony. And there you are, for 40 years, with your positive testimony, with your faith, your interpretation of the facts, your full gospel ideas, and people don't believe you. That can be very frustrating. So frustrating that if you are not careful, you become like the other 10. I'm sitting here waiting. The years are going by. I'm not getting any younger, and nothing's happening. We have a wonderful gospel, but who still believes it? What we believe is not popular anymore. So what do we do now? What can we do? Then you become a very miserable person. Caleb and Joshua, just the same. Two miserable people who say, we have done our best, but without success, but it's their fault. Because blame is so important. If we can find someone to blame, that makes us happy. Then at least we have an excuse. We can say it's their fault. But what's the use of that? If it that doesn't get me any further if it doesn't help. Endlessly talking about who is to blame. You know, it's much better to leave that to God. When I talk to God about blame, he says, that's my job. I will see to that. That makes me feel so good. That is so liberating. It sets me free if I apply that to myself, to my life. Do you know what Caleb said after 40 years? It's wonderful what he says. You can read about it in Joshua chapter 14. He says, when 40 years later, it's his turn to choose a piece of land, then he says, listen, you know what was promised to me 40 years ago? The place with the giants. That was promised to me. Now, if that had been you, you might have thought, I'm 85 now. That's how old Caleb was. So don't give me that area with the giants, because I'm 85, and I'm old, and I can't do much anymore. Certainly not fight against giants. But he doesn't say that. He says in Joshua chapter 14, verses 10 to 13, the same day I came back, Moses told me, since you were faithful to the Lord God, I promise that the places where you went as a spy will belong to you and your descendants forever. Joshua, it was 45 years ago that the Lord told Moses to make that promise, and now I'm 85. Even though Israel has moved from place to place in the desert, the Lord has kept me alive all this time as he said he would. I'm just as strong today as I was then, and I can still fight just as well in battle. So I am asking you for the hill country that the Lord promised me that day. You were there. You heard the other spies talk about that part of the hill country and the large walled towns where the Anakim lived. But surely the Lord will help me take the land, just as he promised. I want the area that God promised me, he says, the region with the giants. Do you know what I want to be? What I am, he says, a Calebite. Not that's what I would like to be. No, that's what I am. That's the way I want to think and believe, and not to think in the line of yes, but, and disappointments. And they wouldn't listen. And now I'm in this situation, and it's all too late now. No, he says, I'm going for what was promised to me. And he goes on his way and is victorious. So easy? Yes, so easy. How? Was he much stronger? No, but his God was so strong. And he went with his God, in the strength of his God. You can say what you like about Caleb, but he wasn't a warrior or frustrated by everything. He didn't blame stress or those irritating people or whatever excuse you can think of, because if I live in that excuse atmosphere, if I'm always saying, I wanted to, but, then I'm always the victim of whatever or whoever stopped me doing it. Then I have my eyes open, but not wide enough. I don't see properly. Maybe I got as far as Hebron, as far as the covenant, but I didn't form the covenant, didn't become part of it, didn't put my trust in God completely, and I do so want to be part of that those people who fall under the covenant, under God's grace. And that's also how I want to see my fellow people, not as problems. I've told you before about my job, the contacts with residents, the conversations we have about the youngsters who are difficult, and others who are bored and just want don't want to do anything anymore. He is a nuisance, they say, and he makes life difficult. And it's because, well, I have also looked at it from the opposite side. For example, if we think we are so much better than these youngsters, how shall we help them? They are stupid, we think, and don't understand the adult world, and they are difficult and complicated. And by saying this, we imply that we do things much better. Well, show me then. Let them see. Let the youngsters discover that there is a lot of courage and energy and trust and support to be found amongst the adults. I'm convinced that youngsters, and not only youngsters, don't want to hear all the time how bad they are, that they are no good. No, they want to see that they are loved, that people care about them and their life. Because I read somewhere, and that applies to you, to the youngsters, to the whole of society, but begin with yourself, that God does not call those who are trained, but trains those who are called. Or he doesn't call those who are already fully equipped. He equips those who are called. Am I equipped? Can I cope with it all? Do I succeed? No, not on my own. But if I let him call me, and if I let him find me, then I can lead the training and the equipping to him, to God. And that's the climate where life and abundance and truth and justice will grow and flourish. That's what's so wonderful about living that way. Another expression I heard, the task that lies ahead is never bigger than the power that is behind us. Yes, and what I want and what we want together, that's why we are a congregation, is to go into the world with that vision, that ideal in mind. God is the power behind us, and not just to preach it to others, but to apply it to our own life and situations. Start there. I read something about that too recently. Someone wrote, "When I was very young, I decided I wanted to change the whole world. After a while, I realized that wasn't as easy as I thought. So then he thought, I'll just change my country, the Netherlands. But that too wasn't feasible. So then he began to think on a smaller scale. A country, a town. And then, when he was very old, he thought, well, maybe I had just better begin with myself. Yeah. But you don't have to wait until you are old. You can start on that much sooner. That's an old saying, isn't it? Make the world a better place and begin with yourself. If things start to improve in my life, because I accept myself as I am, because I allow myself to be loved, because I let myself be set free, then I can become a liberator as well. Then I can set others free. Then I will become a person full of love and compassion and life. Then all that will have an impact, firstly on myself, but also an impact on those around me. That would be wonderful. Then things remain in perspective, because sometimes we become exhausted with the things that we think God has put on our shoulders, but which we have in fact put there ourselves. Yes, it happened because he or she. No, I put it there myself. Step away from this way of thinking and listen to what God says to you. Finally, a beautiful poem. Dear people, do you really think you were meant to be a mass product? Do you really think that you exist only to be kept busy all day, every day, living just for the weekend or working all hours to pay for a holiday, to be just a number on a conveyor belt, or whatever you call life, year after year, simply to end in oblivion? When are you going to appear from behind your appointments diary, from behind your mask, and show your real face? Dear people, when was the last time you listened to the silence, or looked at the stars on a dark country road, and marveled at how small or how great you are? Or lay down on the grass, smelled the flowers, heard the insects, and stared at the sky? Dear people, I shout out to you that I love you. Do you hear me? Do you see me? I want to be a light in your darkest days, and I want to carry you when the going gets tough. I'm not writing just to say that you are not doing things right, but when I see the dark world you live in, it hurts me. It seems so empty and dead, a shadow of what it should be. And that is not what I want for you. I'm writing this letter to impress on you how precious you are to me. Dear people, I don't just want to tell you this. I want you to feel it, to experience it. I want you to feel my love and strength, and experience it in your lives. I hope that you will open your heart to me. Will I hear from you? I wish you peace. Love from Jesus.